All right. Well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, welcome once again to another edition of the Crossing the Crescent Discussion Group. This is a blog talk radio show dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. We are here every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time and on Sundays at, did I say that backward? 5 p.m. on Tuesdays, 2 p.m. on Sundays. I want to make sure I got that right. I see Ed saying that he did not get the link. Ed, it is in the Skype. It's in Messenger. I tell you what, here's what I'll just make it easy. I'm just going to put it in chat here for you. I'll put the link here in chat. If you want to come on board, sir, you're more than welcome. Bada bing, bada boom, making it easy today. Okay, well, welcome to the show. Welcome to another Tuesday afternoon of the Meccan Mystery. This is the fifth edition of this. This is like a target-rich environment is what it is. And I'm having a good time doing this. We have discussed, I don't know how many different facets of Islam, of the Quran, of the historicity of Mecca. And it is simply not there. It's absent. And if you are going to have your eternal soul contingent upon its salvation on something that you know has no evidence whatsoever for it, then you are, I don't want to say a fool. I would say that you're just blinded. I think that's about as kind as I can get about it, because, when you show somebody if you say, okay, I want evidence for Jerusalem, you show me where Jerusalem existed in the first century where Jesus said he'd walk. Show me there those towns in Galilee, Nazareth, for crying out loud. We know Nazareth didn't exist in the first century, or Capernaum. That's what we do. We go back and we do archaeology and we dig up places in Capernaum. We dig up places in Nazareth and all these other places that are mentioned in the Bible. The problem with the Quran is you can't find Mecca. It's mentioned, what is it, mentioned one time in the Quran? But it's all over the Hadith, all over the traditions. But we don't have any mention outside of the traditions and the Quran of a 7th century Mecca. Nowhere. None, zero, nada, zippo, zilch. If there was something mentioning it, if there was a map mentioning it, if there was some type of archaeological artifact demonstrating its existence, if there was some type of mention in somebody's manuscripts, letters going back and forth, bills of lading, anything. We don't have anything. There's zero. And if there was something, you know it would be put out there front and center for everybody to look at. Ed, you were going to say something? You have your presentation ready, right? No. Okay. Okay. In Mystery Babylon, is that what you're talking about? They worship the beast. Oh, sorry. Was it some type of tower with Nimrod or something like that? Or are you talking about the... Oh, yeah, Nebuchadnezzar. Right, okay, right. Okay. Rad, I just muted you. We had some background coming from your mic. Go ahead, Ed. Yes. Yes. Shadrach, Meshach, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I can't ever pronounce it. Abednego. There we go. All right. Yeah. Which of that poor guy. That poor guy. All right. Oh, that'll leave a mark. Well, it sounds fairly straightforward, which causes me to question what's taking you so long to get this together and present it on our show. Well, I tell you what. Let's do this, Ted. If you send me the Cliff Notes version of this, I'll put together a shell of a presentation and then forward that back to you, and then you can tweak it however you want to, or you trust in the can. So if you send that to ericthecaffer@gmail.com, let me post that in chat that way, because some people don't. Okay, I'll send. Yeah, let me just make a note of that. Facebook message, Ed Van Halen. Yes. My email, so you can send me that Cliff Notes version. All right, and we'll get that done. Yeah, and I like the direction you're going with that, and it sounds logical. It sounds like it meets certain theological hurdles, but I'd have to take a look at it a little more. We'll get to you in just a second, Sharon. Sharon, we'll be with you in just a second. Go ahead. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I watched that. I watched the sanitized version, and I tried. Well, I don't need to see that. You know, I know what it looks like. You don't have to. I don't have. But and I tried watching the other part of the video, where they actually show what these clowns did and do, and it just disgusts you, and it just makes you feel filthy knowing that human beings do that to human beings in the name of God. Well, those guys that were in those video clips that are in there obviously meet that description. To do that to other human beings is just disgusting. All right, Sharon. Okay, so we're talking about the Babylonian, Persian, Greek, Roman, and Ottoman Empire. This is the of what? Greek. Okay, so would that also be the Medo-Persian Empire? Would that be included in that? Okay, we'll just shoot them. I'd like to see which ones that they make mention in that when you start looking at, you know, the great empires from history. I don't know if the Egyptian Empire be included? Well, because this is Daniel's vision or John's vision. So, okay, let me know. Okay. I see a lot of when we think about our country, of course, you know, we're operating within a construct, which is the Constitution, which is supposed to be separate from religion. So when we start talking about our country being overrun with Islam, I see a lot of growth of Islam in our country, exponential growth since 9/11. The number of mosques, I think the number of mosques has quadrupled in 9/11. I see a lot more publicity given to the religion, not just to the, you know, when you start talking about the terrorist attacks, just into this and that nature, but a lot of positive publicity given to it and a lot more emphasis on doing dawah. And I see that not because I'm a consumer or we have a show like this, but I just see that in your regular media. So, yeah, I would say that we've seen a lot of growth of it in the United States in just the last decade alone or decade and a half alone. What do you mean by that? Because I know that if you look at the textbook companies, a lot of our textbook companies that are used by our public schools have a lot of petrodollars, have bought majority interest in them. And when you own a majority interest in a textbook company, you can control what goes in and what does not go in those textbooks. Even if we're talking about math textbooks or we're talking about science textbooks, we're talking about, most importantly, history textbooks and social studies textbook, where I would place that emphasis. Are you kidding me? Is this guy back tonight? Really? Oh my gosh! And he, look at what he did. That's kind of impressive. He put my icon upside down. I've been there, and I'm trying to get evicted. I've been trying to get evicted for this, but he just won't let it go. And this rent-free deal that he's given me, I don't want it anymore. Oh my gosh. Anyway, okay. Let's go ahead and get to the heart of this show. I have a 137-slide slideshow prepared for us this evening, and I'm hoping that we get through at least five of them. You know, we've been teaching the Book of Romans in my Sunday school class for a year and a half, and we are just finishing up chapter 14. We'll finish that up this weekend or the following Sunday, and it's just you know, that you can get in that is just, it's exciting. This is not the Book of Romans, of course. I would never compare it to the Book of Romans, but there is a lot of depth in different areas and avenues that we go with it. So let's go ahead and how do I do this? Add settings. Stop. Where am I going? Okay. Let's see. Share. Here we go. One of them senior moments again. This is getting scary. Those are occurring more frequently. Rad's on the road. He's going home. I want to see some like a footage of him on one of the scooters going through Chicago and running people off the side with a rad rant going on, running people off the sidewalk with those. That'd be. Yeah. All right, let's get back to this. Okay, Meccan Mystery, Lost in the Desert. All right, take a look at what I have here for you. I need to bring up my laser pointer. I love my laser pointer. Here we go. Okay. Meccan Mystery, areas we've discussed so far, we've talked about the problems with their sources, the problems with the Hadith, how they were written too late, too far away by people who would not be in the position to know any better. We've looked at the trade routes and how that does not make any sense, where Mecca would be the mother of all cities as far as trade is concerned, because it's not on any maps. And it's in the most obscure location that would be part of any trade route, because you would have to go up thousands of feet on a plateau just to travel that direction. And at the same time, it sits right next to the Red Sea, where you could just leave the stuff on the boat and go up the coastline that way. Then most importantly, this right here, there is no archaeological evidence for a 7th century Mecca. Period. Let me say that again. There is no archaeological evidence for a 7th century Mecca. If there is, I want to see it. If not, then your city did not exist. And if your city did not exist, your religion, your belief system, your faith in Muhammad is foolish. I would ask for at least some type of evidence, some type of archaeological evidence. Go ahead. Exactly. Yeah. No. And on top of that, it isn't just. Okay, Rad, you are the worst Dowagandist I'm kidding. the Mecca moderate. radical moderate mobile. Oh, radical moderate on the mobile. Let's see here. Hold on a second. Look at here. At refuting Dr. Eric Smith, more of there, that would be T-H. Okay, that's not the correct way to spell there. Okay. Lies. It's okay. It's exposed again. Diodorus Siculus, a 1st century B.C. Greek historian, while discussing Arabia, writes, the people that inhabit these parts are called Bismanians and live upon the wild beasts taken in hunting. Here is a sacred temple in high veneration among all the Arabians, the historical library of. Okay, so you're going to have to prove to me that this temple mentioned right here is in Mecca. Show me something that demonstrates that this is in Mecca. The fact is, here's the fact, you can't. And the reason why you can't is because there's no archaeological evidence to support this. This is a lie told by liars. Go ahead, Ed.
In the Hadith. Where's the It just doesn't line up. Oh, we have too much fun with this slideshow. Okay. Let's see. Refuting Eric's. I like that. At least he tries. Okay. Let's see what else we got here. Islam's origins. We talked about there's no doc. Oh, let me go back to this archaeological evidence. Just say one more thing about the archaeological evidence. It's never going to come. The reason why it's never going to come is because
right here, go back. Right here. You see all this? Here's the Kaaba. Here is
I'm sorry. Thank you. Okay.
So here is Kaaba.
This right here, this little blip right here is the Kaaba.
And then if you notice over here, these are supposed to be the hills of Safa and Marwa, where people run back and forth. And this is where Sarah was, or not say it's not Sarah, Hagar. Those are mountains. Don't call them hills. They're mountains now,
because she would run back in between the mountains of Safa and Marwa. I don't care if they don't look like mountains or not. That's what they are. Your eyes are deceiving you.
And this was supposed to be the wilderness. So since this was the wilderness, this would have been the main part of Mecca right here. See, and the Zamzam's over here someplace, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm willing to be wrong on that. But if you notice, all of this building around there, you know, you see all that? You know what is underneath all of these buildings? Cement. And you know why there's cement? There's cement underneath there because they want to cover up any attempt to try to dig up any archaeological evidence that exists. So they know it doesn't exist. And then what do? They cemented right over it to prevent people from even trying to dig or trying to do real research or archaeology. I know you have to go deep. You're going to build something that big. You got to go way down. No kidding. Wow. Yeah. Well, you would think that you would find something. I mean, if this is supposed to be where Adam and Eve were thrown down to earth, if this is supposed to be where Abraham lived, you would find something there in those 20 stories of death. You couldn't help but find something. And you know they would go looking for it if, in fact, that's what they were interested in doing, is finding something there. Right, you got to get to the bedrock, yeah.
Okay, what do we got here? What is this? Okay, so first question is from the Nabataeans.
Is he keep posting? Is he spamming us? More lies. Okay, hold on. Let's look at this. This is kind of interesting. First century before Christ, in his discussion about the Nabataeans, in that he refers to Makkah, and he writes, beyond the land of the Nabataeans is the region of the Bizumenians. And there is a sacred temple in high veneration among all Evans. And he doesn't just stop here. He explains as to whom Diodorus refers to by using the word Bizumenians. He writes, Arab word is given to the image above. I don't know what the image above is. Okay. Yeah, I like to... Because I don't see, okay, it references Mecca, Mecca, but I would like to see the word Mecca in this guy's writings. I double dog dare you to put that. Testifying for expounding historical evidence for Mecca from pre-Christian times. Similarly, Jesuit was, okay. Nasria. Christianity. Also refers to the same quotation from this. Okay, so garbage in, garbage out. Yeah, and that's okay. I wouldn't expect this guy to do scholarship, all kinds of reasons. But At least it's entertainment, and you see there's some pushback. And yeah, well, I tell you what, he's more impressive than the majority of those cowards that he hangs out with. I can tell you that. I'll give him that credit. I don't agree with him, but at least I'll give him that credit. All right. Okay, never mind. All right. Also, we don't have any documents from the era, which would mean, okay, these documents that he is referencing, there are no documents from the era. There is no mention of Mecca. There is one mention by Ptolemy mentions Makaroba, but when Ptolemy mentions Makaroba, he places it north of Medina. So how can it be north of Medina if Mecca is south of Medina? How does that work out? That's the problem. So we don't have any documents pointing to Muhammad, period. We have here's a great thing. We don't have anything, the Qiblas, all of the Qiblas for the first 100 years face Petra. They don't face Mecca. They don't even face the place that Muhammad commanded. Oh, we're changing our Qibla from Jerusalem to Mecca. They don't face that direction. So your archaeology all over the world, not just in Mecca itself, is absent from confirming this the direction of prayer. Go ahead. Somebody was going to chime in there. All right. And let's see here. The coins, we talked about the coins and how the coins don't line up with a prophet preaching monotheism. Your reference or lies exposed again. See, I'm not going to, okay. Okay, that's good. Because, well, hold on. It says, see al Nasiriya wa adabada yabadabadu. Okay, here's what he's writing. Well, you know, I would even put the qualifier. It can be from Arabia. I wouldn't mind if it was from Arabia. I wouldn't mind at all. But give us a source that isn't from an Islamic source. I would ask for that. Well, that's how you do history too. I mean, you have to have something corroborating your. Excuse me, that's something that corroborates your evidence. And the problem is that you don't have anything that corroborates your evidence. And the reason why you don't have anything that corroborates your evidence is because you don't have any evidence to begin with. Sorry. And what type of society would do that? Unless they have something to hide, you would definitely not cement over the Kaaba. You would not cement over that area. I mean, if people are coming to, well, they also dig in and around all of these ancient sites. If you go into the old city of Jerusalem, there are digs all over the place. But at the same time, yeah, I saw that article that you sent me. But if you go to Jerusalem in the old city, they have digs all over this, but they're not digging up the whole old city. There's still all kinds of commerce and all kinds of people that live in the old city, but you still can do archaeology there. You don't have to cement over the entire thing and hope nobody's paying attention. When we went over there, my wife and I went over there, went back in 2017, 2018. Let me see here. That's dated. Doesn't matter. No, we went to the Western Wall, and we got a special tour to go. They have tunneled down alongside of the Western Wall, going from the southern part of it to the north part of it, and you can go down a good 20 feet, and you can see the archaeological evidences that they've dug up, the artifacts that they've dug up there. The stones themselves, folks, the stones themselves are 500 tons. These, they call them Ashkelar stones. These things are absolutely humongous.
Right. And what they're doing is they're preserving their history, knowing that there is a belief system out there, a group of people that is bent on destroying their history to prop up their own. Gee, I wonder who that might be. I'm not going to mention who it would be. Right. Okay, so we looked at, let's see here, we've looked at the coins, we've looked at the Qiblas, we've looked at the archaeological evidence. What else have we looked at? We looked at rock inscriptions, we haven't looked at any rock inscriptions. You know why we haven't looked at any rock inscriptions indicating that there was a 7th century Mecca? Because there aren't any rock inscriptions indicating that there was a 7th century Mecca. Isn't that just a little peculiar? If this was supposed to, I've got this guy, some of the people on Facebook, they'll instant message you, and they want to get in this long, drawn-out debate all the time. They're saying, well, you don't know what you're talking about. You're, okay, fine. Come on. I send them the links to the show, and I invite them to come to the show all the time, and they just never seem to want to show up for some reason. But this guy was saying, well, Jesus was a Muslim. And my question is, well, when did Jesus make Hajj to Mecca? Where do I find that? I was asking, when does Jesus make the, if Jesus was a Muslim and he did follow all of the, you know, follow the, was a true, but what would we call him? A Muslim is somebody who submits to the will of God. Okay, fine. But all of these pre-Islamic practices by the pagans were supposedly corrupt. So I would think that Jesus would have been practicing what was a true Islamic practice, which would include a Hajj to Mecca. All of the prophets would have made Hajj to Mecca. It's in the Injil. It's in the Injil. Right. This and they know it, and so when you start asking them for it, it gets yeah, you're right. It gets really stupid because you could just see how desperate people can become, and just as soon as you start bringing the stuff up, they want to change the subject to something else, and that's what they're doing on Facebook. But anyway, okay. All right, so let's look at the rightly guided caliphs. Now, there were how many rightly guided caliphs? There were most four. There were supposed to be Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, and Ali. So let's look and see who they are. Yeah, they were all killed with the except. The only one wasn't killed was it Uthman that was the only one that wasn't killed? No, it was Abu Bakr was the only one that was in, Abu Bakr is the one that got sick. The sin, the standard Islamic narrative says that he got sick and died. The other three, yeah, they were killed. But Abu Bakr, the first one, the guy that waged the Ridda Wars, yeah, that guy, he got sick and died. All right, so let's look at the term caliph. Now, a caliph is a title in the standard Islamic narrative, and it refers to those four rulers, Abu Bakr, Omar, Uthman, and Ali, that ruled right after Muhammad. The thing is that we don't have any evidence outside of the standard Islamic narrative, outside of their writing, demonstrating that they ever existed. You would think you would have a rock inscription somewhere from the 7th century providing some type of attestation to them. And when you look at the term, which was used by Umar al-Mu'minin, whatever his name is, the commander of the faithful, it doesn't denote a successor. So the later term caliph was a shortening of this word right here. I'm not even going to try to – caliphat, rasu'ala, and meant successor of the messenger of God. So when we look at any references to the fourth caliphs, Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, and Ali, the historicity of the first four caliphs is in doubt. Why? Because any attempts that we have had to get the story straight, a consistent, logical, chronological story straight, has failed miserably. And here's how when we look at this, the contradictions that we see. Abu Bakr couldn't have been caliph. Why? Because we have contradictory evidence that rules that out within the sin. Go ahead. This is the historicity. I mean, this is outside the Quran, but you can call it a contradiction. Yes, I like the term, but this is actually their history. This is their takrif. They can't even get this straight. Umar's historicity rests on just one rock inscription, just one. But anybody could have had that. Even if you say, okay, this is Umar, we know from the pack of Umar, well, it just rests on one rock inscription. And the name Uthman can't be found anywhere, even in the cemetery that he's supposedly buried with a bunch of Jews. And Ali, of the 7th century, was never a caliph, and he died 3 years before his reign was meant to have ended. So the historicity of all of this is in serious doubt and cannot be confirmed by anything by Islamic narratives. Now, one of the main documents that I go to is called the Pack of Umar. When we start talking about get the Islam to assimilate to Western culture. I didn't know we call it the Wolf Pack, so I never heard of that. Okay, well, the Pack of Umar. Okay, here's what I like about the Pack of Umar. The Pack of Umar clearly demonstrates, and it has been used for the Sharia. If you look at a lot of the Sharia, you will find tenets from the Pack of Umar. You cannot, kafirs can't have weapons. You have to give up a seat for a Muslim if they want to sit down. You have to wear certain types of clothing. You cannot wear your hair a certain way. You can't use Arabic inscriptions on your seal. You have to provide Muslims a place to stay at night for 3 days if they want to stay. So there's all kinds of things in the Pack of Umar that directly contradict Western civilization, Western culture. For example, a kafir cannot teach the Quran to children, or Muslim children. Just Google the Pack of Umar and then compare that to the United States Constitution. And then try to tell me that it is compatible with Western civilization, or at least with the American law. And the quick answer that you'll find is it's not. Well, here's what you might not be aware of. Oh, I see that we got 23 people watching right now, which is great for a Tuesday night. Like, subscribe, share. What's the last thing? There's four things. Like, hit the bell for. There we go. Hit the bell. Okay. Okay. Wage jihad on the bell. Okay, what I was saying is that they probably made a good that was probably a good move to say that kafirs cannot teach the Quran to Muslim children, because you would not want me to teach the Quran to Muslim children, because there's all kinds of things. I would go, the first place I would go is verse 98:6. That's the first place I would go. I know there's other people that go places, and that's fine. But this is the way their God, their Allah, views people who do not believe in their faith. We're the worst of creatures. We're not the worst of human beings. We are the worst of creatures. This is the God of the universe viewing us that way. You don't view humanity that way. You love your fellow human beings. You might, they might disagree with them. You might hate the things that believe, hate the things that, but you love your fellow human beings. Why? Because they're created. They bear the image of the divine. They are created in God's image. Go ahead. Something rad. You were going to say something? In the classroom? Yeah. that's what they say. This guy is going to hurt the religion of little Muslim children because he teaches. This is where people are just idiots. Were you there? Did you see me? Did you find me teaching the Quran to one of the children? This is why they want certain people to get out of the classroom. Okay, let's jump back into this. Okay, now this one was, somebody's eating a bag of chips. Who is that? Is that you, Ed? Okay, maybe it was Paul. Paul. Okay, let's, 7th century, who is Ibn Kabisa? Ibn Kabisa. So, Ilyas Ibn Kabisa of, I can't even pronounce these words. Okay. Let's just look at this. The traditions tell us that Muhammad lived in the Hejaz. Now, the Hejaz is this area, right here, between Mecca and Medina. This is supposed to be the holy precinct that no non-Muslims can go to. At least I know they can't go into Mecca. I don't know about the entire Hejaz. It might be true. I don't know for sure. And invaded the Byzantines and the Persians, which were clear up here. Here's the Byzantines up here. Oops, got to go further north. And the Persians were over here. So he was significant. Nothing was written about this guy at that time. And everything we know about Muhammad is from the 9th and 10th centuries. What we do find is a man nicknamed Muhammad, and he's referred to in the 7th century, but he lived much further north. He didn't live down in the Hejaz. In 618, the Saracens rebelled, took Syria, Arabia, Mesopotamia, and they selected a king in 622. So what we need to do is we need to look at this guy, this Lahmid king up here in this kingdom, reconquered it. Now, Bukhari says Muhammad ibn Abi Kabasa, similar to Ilyas ibn Kabisa of the, that word again, the Hira. Is that how you say it? Al-Tai, the Hira? Okay. So you have all of these other references referencing this guy here, this Muhammad, who's further north, but not the one down south. So let's look at the conclusion here. So the later traditions have the wrong Muhammad, as the real Muhammad is supposed to have lived much further north and actually had quite a bit of money. But if you think of the traditional, the sin of Muhammad in the south, he died pretty wealthy himself. But when you look at the outside sources, outside of the standard Islamic narrative, it doesn't add up. Now let's look at the claims of perfect preservation of the Quran. Not one letter, not one diacritical mark preserved. So this is what is claimed. Number one, it is uncreated and exists only on these clay tablets in heaven. It is eternal. Now, this in of itself presents a problem. Does anybody identify what that problem is? Well, it's called the Quran. That's the standard answer. So you want some evidence. I get it. That's fine. But just the idea of this. Okay, so if Allah's word is eternal. Karen's got this. There you go. Batea's an ambassador visited, here is Karen saying here, to the court of the Tang Dynasty in circa 650. So it's the wrong guy. Bada bing. Thank you, Karen. What was I saying? Okay, the tablets. Okay, so you have tablets that are eternal. Now, if something is eternal, that means that has always existed. That means that it is uncreated. So if it is uncreated, then that itself makes it divine. It makes it God-like, meaning that their God, their Allah, is also co-eternal with tablets that are in heaven. How can that be? How can the tablets be the speech of Allah, but yet they're supposed to be eternal? At some point in time, Allah would have had to speak so these tablets would know what to contain. The logic of this is absolutely absurd, trying to follow that and trying to make it, to reconcile that with the rules of logic say. So that alone is very problematic, to say that the Quran is eternal. The tablets are eternal. The Quran was sent down between 610, 632, but it was not written down until Uthman compiled it supposedly. It was sent down into the space-time continuum that we have to live in here. I'm cool. If you were to say this is the eternal speech of Allah, and this is what we have here on Earth, I'm cool with what we have here on Earth. You can say this is the eternal speech of Allah, that's fine. But when you try to tell me that Allah's speech is eternal, and yet it was written down, that means that Allah had to pre-exist the speech, meaning that the speech is not eternal. It doesn't eternally exist with Allah in heaven. Well, he did, but the Jews corrupted it, don't you know? It's in the Injil. I mean, You guys are so tough on these guys. You guys are just asking some of the most absurd questions. Stop. Okay, let's see. Let's get back to this big hot mess that they call the standard Islamic narrative. All right, number three. Where's number three? There we go. It was completed by Uthman in 652, according to Al-Bukhari. Now that I can believe that if you're going to believe the standard Islamic narrative, if you're going to believe this, that is believable, meaning that, okay, they took all of the existing bones, parchments, manuscripts, fragments, whatever, sent them to Uthman, and Uthman sorted them out and then edited through them and came up with what we have in the Quran today. I can believe that, with the exception, is that if all of these were truly accurate, why would you have to burn them? Why would you have to compile them into one book and then burn everything that you use? Why not leave that for posterity's sake? Why not put it in a museum? Oh, they don't have museums. They don't have any culture. That's right. Why not do something like that, though? So to say that Uthman completed in 652, as far as history, the standard Islamic narrative goes, I believe that makes sense. But as far as history is concerned, it makes zero sense, because we don't have any manuscript evidence for that. Go ahead. I get it. That makes it, that asking that question, you know, what belongs and what doesn't belong in here? Yeah, I agree. If you want to go in that direction, that Of course, you had the ISNETs that would tell you what is supposed to be in there, what is not supposed to be in there. Those are the guys that supposedly memorized the Quran. I think, was that the ISNAD, is ISNADs the ones that are bring the chain of narrations for the Hadiths? Those are, okay, chain of narrations. Okay, well, you would still... Well, I agree. It doesn't explain diddly squat in detail. As a matter of fact, there's only like one story that goes from the beginning of it and then finishes it. I can't even remember what it is off the top of my head. And the rest of them are all fragmentary and contradict each other in one form or another. So I get that. I don't agree that it explains things in detail. This is why you have to have Tasfir to explain it to you. And let's just be clear. If you need somebody to explain to you what something means, you're in a cult. That's just the bottom line. If you have to have somebody explain to you, for example, take 65:4, where it talks about divorcing little girls. If you need somebody to come and explain to you and say that, well, no, that's not what it actually means, then you're probably in a cult. Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to protect somebody within that cult itself. Okay, so what else do... A conceiver, yes. Okay, the thing that they claim is that it is unchanged in the last 1,400 years. And it even says that in the Quran itself, it is unchanged. Now... This perfect preservation thing is, well, hold on, is that part of that? Hold on, let me make sure it's not. So unchanged would mean that it has been perfectly preserved for the past 1,400 years, meaning that nobody has been able to make a change, not even, some they even used to say, not even one diacritical mark, not realizing that the diacritical marks did not come for about 100 years. In the classic Arabic, they did. And so to say that not one diacritical mark has changed is simply foolish. Also, yeah, Dan's, I got his book right up here. That's just 22. There have been thousands of different variants within the Quranic manuscripts. There have been Quranic manuscripts that have not been perfectly preserved. Now, am I saying that you cannot get to what the original initially said? You probably can. But the likelihood of you being able to get exactly what it said, you can get back close to what it said, but you're not going to get the exact thing. Because when scribes copy documents, when you have people hand copy documents, people make errors. It's just the way human beings are. You are not going to get a perfect copy unless you use modern technology. So to say that they were perfectly preserved is just, it's repeating a mantra. It's flying in the face of what all reason and logic demand, that people make errors when they make copies of books, when they copy letters. They're going to make errors. It's going to happen. It's just the way things are. And why they insist, and this is what I can understand, why they insist to say, well, it's been perfectly preserved. Why they insist to me? It really, I don't understand. Why can't you say, I mean, because if we look at the Bible, we look at the New Testament. The New Testament has 136,000 words in it, I think. I think that's the number, 136,000, 138,000, somewhere around there. Okay. Well, okay, when we look at the New Testament manuscripts that we have, the Greek New Testament manuscripts that we have, and you go through those and add up all the variants, there comes out to be over 450,000 variants on a text that has 138,000 words in it. So the mantra is always, how can you possibly know what it was originally meant to say? Well, you have to analyze what those variants are. And when Brubaker identifies thousands of variants within the Islamic text, it's not a bad, not a terrible thing. It just shows that there was not a standardization in spelling, because when we look at those variants from the New Testament, the majority of those variants are either spelling, using different words to describe the same thing, word order is switched around, or you can have, let's see, spelling, word order. I mean, it's just small things. Are they repeating something or leaving something out, omission? So you have these things in the New Testament, and we know this, and we don't have a problem with it, but it doesn't change the message. This is the important part to understand. This is why I can't understand why they have to go with perfect preservation. It's perfectly preserved, and we know it's been perfectly preserved on tablets throughout all eternity, and then it was sent down and it's been perfectly preserved since then. It's not true, and we have the evidence, the manuscript evidence, to demonstrate that. And by the way, let me just say one more thing about the New Testament manuscripts. When Ed said that we have over 5,000 Greek New Testament manuscripts, we have over 2.5 million pages of Greek New Testament manuscripts. And when you start analyzing that and saying, okay, well, they got 450,000, that's about one variant every five pages. And that could be a word's misspelled because they did not have standardization in the spelling. A word might have been left out, or they might have just changed around the word order. That's all, but that's one every five pages. So it doesn't have to have perfect preservation in order to meet that criteria. Okay, next one. Let's get to it. The Quran is guarded by Allah. Now, I'm not sure how Allah is going to guard the Quran that I have here in my house, because I found the Quran here in my house, and I've made all kinds of scribbles in it and annotations in it and done all kinds of things to it. And to say that it is guarded, well, does that mean that it is guarded in those eternal tablets that he has in heaven? Is that true? Well, I don't know, because we can't have access to that eternal Quran that exists in heaven. Hi there.
I'm going
to mute it. All right, hold on. My granddaughter's in here. I have to mute it. What are you doing?
Mama needs me to make a copy of this for one of her bunko friends.
For what?
For one of her bunko friends once.
Ah, okay.
This copy's made.
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead, Rhett. Yeah, go ahead, Red. I'm sorry. Yeah. Right. Dead air is bad air, especially if you get with the, if you try to listen to the Blog Talk Radio part of it. So yeah, my granddaughter had to come in and make a copy. I told you I can go a little bit longer tonight because the Queen is having one of her ladies' nights here. They have like a club, and the last couple of minutes they've all been pulling into the driveway, and my granddaughter came tonight to join them, and she's making a copy on the scanner here for them. I have to stay in the Kafir cave. I cannot come out of the cavernous depths until like 9 o'clock. I hope I don't have to go to the bathroom. Yeah. In my own house, even. I have to go out the hall and back. Anyway, I don't want to get into the details of it. All right. I'll be all right. Okay. And this last one, the Quran was finally canonized in 1924 and made official 1985. Now, I would agree with that. It was finally canonized, but the type of prawn that was canonized was the Hops Krahn. And the Hops Krahn is different from the Wash Krahn and the other 35 different krahns that exist today. So which one is this up here that was eternal created and still exists on clay tablets in heaven? And which one was sent down to Muhammad if they're all different? And we don't know. And therein lies the problem. Oops, sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I hit the wrong button. I was talking. I looked down. You're muted. I've heard that before where they've collected up all the Qurans. How's that go? They collected up all the Qurans and then threw them in the Nile, destroying them, or an all-specific type of Quran or something like that. Right. Right, yeah. I've heard that story before. I think Jay Smith got body slammed over saying something about that one time. I think he got, I don't know if it was Yasser Qadhi said something about it, or Yasser, have you guys ever heard of the word of ultra-crepidarian? Crepitarian? Yasser Qadhi. I had to look that one up. I said, man, that's a good word. Way to go. That's why you got a PhD, my friend. Yeah, okay. Deep in the heart of Kafiristan. I think he used to teach there, but he moved. Okay, so let's go ahead and... the point that I wanted to make here is we can't confront numbers 1 and 2, but we can certainly look at numbers 3, 2, 6 to have to see true. So let's look how the Quran was canonized. Okay, you have 5 periods of the Quran's creation. Number 1, under Uthman, you have the Qurayshi Codex from 652. Then you have the Ibn Mujahideen readings, which are dated to 936. You have the Al-Shatibi that has 14 different Qurats. I think that's what those are called, the transmitters, which is 1194. And then you have the Al-Jazari that has 3 readings, 6 transmitters. And then you have the final canon, the Hops, which is in 1924. So you have all kinds of different variant readings of the Quran throughout history. And how do we know this? Well, manuscript evidence, Quranic or Islamic traditions. If you look at Islamic history in the Takrif, or if you look at the Hadith, we can find all of the information there. Canon 1, Abu Bakr's Quran. This is where we find Sahih Bukhari describing it as being, let's see here. Okay, we know Abu Bakr was Caliph from 632 to 634. And Umar called Zayn ibn Talbit to collect the Quran because all of those who were killed at Yamama had memorized it. And if you remember, Yamama is that famous battle where many of the memorizers of the Quran were killed in the battle because they were told that the Quran would be preserved. So the king was. Well, if the Allah promises he's going to preserve the Quran, he most certainly is going to protect these people from dying. Well, it didn't work out for him. They had a bad day. And then at first, he refuses to do this. And the reason why he refuses to do this is because Muhammad didn't do it. And he's saying, look, I'm not going to do something Muhammad didn't do. You're acting crazy here by asking me to do something like that. So he collects it from palm leaves, white stones, men's memories, and let's see. If you look at Quran verse 9, verses 1, 28, and 29, he only found this with one of the reciters Abhi Kumzama Ansari. And this first recitation is, I'm sorry, I keep pop in and out, but it minimizes or goes back to that side. Sorry. No, that's all right. Let me get a... I had to take a sip of kaffir juice there. Okay, so the first recension is given to Hafsa, Muhammad's wife, and the daughter of Mars. She put it on her bed for 20 years. So she's taking the most important document that exists in all of Islam, right, and puts it underneath her bed. That's a story. Yeah, I'm going to believe that. It just does not make sense in the aggregate. I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense. Okay, let's go to the next one. It's with the Injil. Okay, that's what that we're gonna go with today. It's sitting right there on the desk right next to the Injil. Don't you question it? It's in Sahih al-Mubadaba, and you have to believe it there. You're going to be charged with apostasy. Good Lord. Okay, let's see here. So, I can't pronounce this. At the Battle of Azerbaijan, here's Iraqi and Syrian dialects of the Quran and demands there be one Quran. So you have these different dialects creeping into it. And I think this guy got scuffed up or something. They almost came to blows when they heard people reciting a different version of the Quran. Am I right on that? Azerbaijan, yes. Oh, darn. So you mean you might have been, well, you look at the date of this. This is date. What was this date today? I thought I just saw a date. Yeah, there, 652. But this is from Uthman. So if you're talking 652, that's when Uthman's caliph. Ali didn't become caliph until what, 657, 659 or so? Not so. Then he has three helpers, Azubair, As ibn Hisham, which was Uthman's son-in-law's. Sorry. Let's call in my son-in-laws here to give some help with this. Come on. Okay. Look at right here. He's saying, look at these guys. He brings in his son-in-laws to help with the canonization of the Quran to determine what goes in and what goes out. Now, come on. Really? Come on. And they're only, and okay, now listen, they're supposed to only write it in the Qureshi dialect. Now, where are they located when they're supposed to write it in the Qureshi dialect? If this is 652, well, I don't think that they're in Mecca, though, to be honest with you. And how are they supposed to know what the Qureshi dialect is? Then they send this finally, I agree 100%. There's no evidence for its existence. Then they're just supposed to send a copy to every five provinces and all the other manuscripts that disagree with the one that they used, which use Iraq and Syrian dialects, partial and full, are burned. Could you imagine going out and taking ancient manuscript, not even ancient manuscript. Let's say you're a first century Christian, and you receive a letter from Paul to your church, and this letter is the letter from Rome, the one that he sent to the Romans, okay, and you get a copy of it, and then you get another letter of the same letter, and you start comparing them and go, well, wait a second, these two letters don't match. Would you, perfectly, okay, there might be small variance in it. Are you going to burn one of those letters or write your own, copy your own, and then burn both of those? Well, let's say that, let's say this is the early second century. Let's say this is like, well, after Paul's dead, okay? Are you going to burn manuscripts when they don't match what you would, they don't perfectly match one another? You're not going to do that. It makes no sense. So we start looking at the standard Islamic narrative. You're just shaking your head. And you go, well, none of this makes any sense. But yet, it's taught and believed by 1.6 billion people. Okay. And then look at here. Only one verse from this Quran was found with one man, Kumzamiya bin Thabit and Asari. Now, look at the verse number, 3323. Now I'm going to go back. What's the verse number? 3323. Now let's go back. Watch this. Only one verse with only one man, Abi Kamzamiya, which is a different name. I'm sorry. And look at the verse numbers. 9, 128, and 29. So there's a difference here in the narrative. Here it's 3323, and it's a different person. Do you see a problem here? Of course you do. I mean, if you just put this in front of you, when you map this stuff out, you can clearly see the contradictions. You can clearly see the problems that we have with it. Yeah, go ahead. No, but this is what the traditions say. I'm saying this is what the traditions from Bukhari say, Ed. This is from Bukhari. Okay, so here's the standard Islamic narrative. Here you have Muhammad dying at 632. He's given the first Quran, where you have seven different readings. So we have seven different Qurans. Then you have Uthman's Qurashi one from Zayd ibn Thabit. So take those away. Then you go back to one Quran. Then up here you have five copies of Uthman's recension set out right here to the five different cities in the Hijaz, Mecca, Medina. I don't know what city would that be. Babylon. I don't know where that is. Is that Iran? Okay, Iraq, Iran. No. Babylon's way up here. That's Damascus there. This would be. I think you're right on that, Connie. I think that is Kufa right there. Over here, I'm not sure what city this is over here. This would be over in Iran. That's, well, Iraq is right here. This, I think this is Iran right here. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So what is Jay? Okay. Keep in mind, Jay Smith made all of these things. So it's kind of hard to follow his, okay, so here you have Ubay ibn Ka'b, 116, Ibn Umasud, 111, Ibn Musa, 114, and they're all north. This is the thing, this is the point I wanted to make. All of these Qurans up here are from the north. Oops, from up here are from the north. They're not from the south where things supposedly to occur. So when we look at the canons, 2 through 5, and these are the years 736 to 1924. Muhammad died 632, the Uthman recension, the Qureshi dialect 652. And then look at all these different ones. I mean, they just start falling out all over. And this is according to Ibn Mujahid, 936, and all of these separate ones. I'm not even trying to keep up with them. I mean, I went through them the last couple of days trying to change the color of the font just so you could see it. But I just wanted you to see the sheer scale of these things. Go ahead. Go ahead, Miran. I can't hear you. Say that again. No, we didn't talk about that. You want to talk about that? You can go ahead. Okay. Yeah, we can go ahead and talk when you get done. We can go ahead and do that. All right. Let's see here. Going back to the chat. Okay. Who is this? Villanaeus means that when there was, Uthman and his brothers in it. Okay, hold on. Guys, he seemed pretty, it's a consensus of the scholars that it's important, not the preservation of bits of paper. Uthman and his brothers in law consensus. This means that there's a new cultural consensus. The Quranic and Hadith changes get merit. And what? Go ahead. This is why modern Islamic currency doesn't have crosses on it. This is true. No, I don't think that's what he's saying, Ed. I don't think that's what he's saying. He's saying it's the consensus of Scott. Let's see. The consensus of scholars is important, not the preservation of bits of paper. Uthman and his brothers-in-law is consensus. Okay, the consensus of scholars is that Uthman and his brother-in-laws are the ones that did it, evidently. That means that when there is a new cultural consensus, the Quranic and Hadith can just get merit. And notice what he says here. The modern Islamic currency didn't have crosses on it, but the early Islamic coins did. That. Okay, so let's look at Quran's northern orientation. I am worked out. Good night. Tonight, I'm just tired. Okay, the northern dominance. Let's look at this. Here you have Mecca and the three Qirats that come from Mecca. In the Medina, you have five separate Qirats. Now, remember, the Qirats are the way that it was recited. They're not to be. What's the other thing that they have? Al-Ruf. The Al-Ruf are the. Am I right on that? No, that's not. The Qirats are the way that they were recited, and the Al-Ruf are the actual manuscripts. Am I right on this? From which they recite from. So there's different recitations based on differing Al-Ruf, different manuscripts. Which makes zero sense, but let's just keep rolling. Okay. And then you have in Cairo, you have one different Qirat. Then you have Damascus, three different Qirats, recitations. And then in Basra, I think that's what that last one was pointing to, was Basra, when we were trying to figure out what city that was involved in. Basra is in modern day Iraq, as a matter of fact. And then Kufa, I think, Connie, you were right on that. That was Kufa. Way to go. Connie gets a gold star on geography today. And you have 12 separate Qirats recited in Kufa. And so this is 30 official Qirats. In the Hejaz, you have 8 of them. So Iraq and Syria, you have 22. So when we look at the different Qirats, up here, you have the majority of them are up here, but they differ from what is down in Mecca and, Medina. So the minority of them are in Mecca, Medina, down in the Hejaz, and all of the northern ones, except Cairo, are where the Abbasids originated from. Now, the Abbasid Empire, if you remember, existed in the middle of the 8th century. I can't remember when it ended, but you had the Umayyad Empire, and then it was taken over by the Abbasids by the middle of the by the middle of the 8th century. And that is a pier, as a matter of fact, which is very problematic. Okay, so where was the Hafskran from? It's from Kufa, Iraq. Where's Kufa? Kufa is clear up here in Iraq, folks. This is way far north. It's too far north to have any type of validity from something that far south, down in Hejaz. So the Islamic tradition stipulates that his Quran, Muhammad's Quran, was written in the Qureshi dialect, and it's the dialect of the Hejaz, but it's constructed up here in Kufa, where they don't speak that dialect. That makes no sense at all. So the conclusion concerning the canons is that Shadi Nasser's five stages of canonization are a good module to use when ascertaining the Quranic canon. Usman's canon is located too far south, as the real manuscripts were all further north. Mujahid's 936 canon of seven is made up of two in the Hejaz and five up north, so that can't be true because they're different from one another. Al-Shatibi's canon of 14 is made up of three in the Hejaz and 11 up north, and they all differ. And the canon for Al-Jazi's canon, nine of them is made up of in the north and three in the Hejaz, or six, I'm sorry, of nine is made up of three in the Hejaz and six up north. And the Muhammad Ali al-Husseini's, is that how you say Husseini? Al-Haddad's canon is one singularly, which is up north in in Cairo. So thus, the 30 official Qurans in use today, only eight are from the Hejaz. 22 come from up north. And when we think of these areas up north, they were all in areas that the Abbasids resided and ruled in. You see a pattern here of changes, corruption, and things like that happening. Uh-oh. I don't know. Am I being called one? I don't know. That's what you get. Uh-oh. Look who popped in. Look at this. Hi there. I'm a dean. He's in Mecca now. Okay. Hey, I tell you what. That's where he's called a racist. Okay, I'm being called a racist again. Okay, Aladdin, I would. Okay, here's what I want him to do. If he's in Mecca now, he says, hey, I'm in Mecca now. I'm on Mecca now, which I think he meant to say, I'm in Mecca now. That's fine. Aladdin, go find me anything in that city that demonstrates that the city existed in the 7th century. I dare you. I double dog dare you. Uh-oh. Right. And yes, anything. Help us out. Cure us of our racist ignorance and hate. Please, per favor. There, you said in two different languages. Okay. Let's see here. I don't know if I want to go this further. I am sorry, but I am just... Okay, hold on. Let me see here. No, hold on. Let's do this. Here we go. This is going to be kind of fun. Petra versus Iraq. Who knows what country Petra's in right now? Who can tell me what country Petra's in? Yes, it's in Jordan. And what country? Whoops. Pushed the wrong button. What? From where? Okay. So was this a Nabataean? Was this a Nabataean coin that came from Petra? Because the Nabataeans are the people who came from Petra. Well, I'm not. Hold on a second. I'm not. Remember that word that. I'm trying to think, what were those people who studied coins? That was that word I was having a problem. Namestis or something like that. We were trying to figure out how to say that word last week. Well, you know, who are these people that study these coins that could tell us, you know, what these coins? So I'm not one of those guys. So if you send me a picture of it, I'm not going to know the difference whether it's from Petra or it was from Peoria. I don't know where it comes from. Oh my gosh, yeah, from Agrippa. I'll give you 75 for them. How's that? You're gonna send me the coins? You're gonna send me a picture of the coin. Yeah. She's gonna send me a picture of the coin. She's not gonna send me the coins. I just wanna make sure people understand that. Okay, look at Alan Dean here. I'm not interested in your silly arguments and hate. No wonder after all, I don't know. Your channel never approves. I enjoy worship in Mecca now. Okay, well, I'm glad you're worshiping in Mecca. But again, it's just a simple question. And this is, and I hope you can take this question seriously. Find yourself some evidence that shows that Mecca existed in the 7th century. When all of these traditions that you follow, when all of these traditions that you follow were supposed to have occurred. Now, the traditions that we follow, as Christians, we can show that the city of Jerusalem existed in the first century. We have evidence showing that the city of Nazareth, the city of Bethlehem, the city of Capernaum all existed in the first century. We have that evidence. We as Christians can demonstrate the historicity of our faith system. And this is what you this is exactly what you do. This is what you do when you you cannot do that for your own. You lash out at people and call them racist. You call them what else did he call me? You have 30 different versions of the Arabic Bible. Okay, that's fine. We don't have a problem with that. When we go back and we start doing examining the earliest manuscripts of the Bible, we have over 5,000 Greek manuscripts. We have over, when you count them up, we have over 25,000 Greek, Syriac, Aramaic, and Latin manuscripts of the Bible. So to have 30 different versions of an Arabic, it's not a problem for us. You might want to think it's a problem, but it's not. When you actually sit back and you do the serious scholarship on this, it's not a problem at all. But you're not serious. And the reason why we know you're not serious is because you're sitting in this desert right now, bowing down, circumambulating this rock in the middle of the desert and trying to tell us Christians that we're pagans when you're walking around a rock. Think about that just for a second. What problems that might arise for you. But the thing here, though, Aladdin, go back and find me one piece of evidence, one piece of archaeological evidence demonstrating Mecca existed in the 7th century. Just one. That's all I'm asking for. We have thousands of different parts of evidence demonstrating that the historicity of the New Testament. Thousands of them. I'm just asking for one. And the problem is, and you know, when you lay down at night, when you lay down tonight, and you can't do that, it's going to leave you up wandering and doubting that book, that evil book that you think was sent down from God. Who's this here? If that's the Sam, we appreciate you coming, Sam. Thank you for coming tonight. Oh, it's not Sam? Who is that then? Okay. All right, let's get back to Petra, the Petra problem. Aladdin being this. Okay. Oops, sorry, Red. I left you in the back. Red, I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to leave you back there so long. Okay. Well, okay, he wouldn't stand 2 seconds with Daffy Duck. It doesn't have to be Sam Shimon. The guy is... Anyway, we call them lightweights. All right, back to Petra and... All right, let's go back to Petra. Let's remind ourselves of Petra in Jordan. Now, here you have two conflicting or two complementary sequential scenarios. Iraq concerns politics, the Quran, and the theological debates. Petra concerns really only the Qiblas that were illuminated, or should I use the word better, expressed or in, brought to, who is this? Somebody's coming to the door that I don't recognize. What was I saying? Okay, Petra has the Qibla problem, where the direction of prayer goes to points towards Petra. Now, when we look at Iraq, the evidence that we have for Iraq predates Petra. Or am I getting that wrong? I don't know if I'm getting that wrong. Let's see here. So Iraq is important between 577 and 636, and Petra is important from 626, which is 6 years before Muhammad dies, and 727, because this is where we have Qiblas facing Petra. Excuse me. And let's see here. So let's look at Petra versus Mecca. Okay, Petra has all the stations of the pilgrimage, which are now, that we now have been moved to Mecca. Petra has a squared center, which had a Kaaba. I wonder if that is the Kaaba that was referenced by Marshall earlier, or the center of worship that they were talking about, that has this exact dimensions mentioned by Zakari, which didn't fit the present-day Kaaba that we find in Mecca. That's kind of important. As a matter of fact, that's very important. Safa and Marwa Mountains to commemorate Hagar looking for water are in Petra. You have mountains there. You do not have those itty-bitty hills. Now, I showed you those hills. Those are not mountains. And if they were mountains, you would not be able to build an entire complex over these guys, which they did, to facilitate the running in between the two of them during Saudi Arabian August, when it's 125 degrees. Okay. The washing of water with cisterns and waterways, you have that in Petra. In Mecca, it only has one simple well, the Zamzam well, and that does not have enough water flowing through it or within it to sustain any large amount of people at all. And then this plain is a slippery sloped mountain with a mosque and church at the top where 5,000 people could pray, is again only found in Petra. And the Jamarat platform with the pillar to throw the 49 of the 72 rocks at it is also only found in Petra. It is not three platforms as we find in Mecca, suggesting three devils. So notice where Petra is. Let's take a look where Petra is. Petra is clear up north here. This is a Nabataean. Again, this is the Nabataeans. This is an established culture of the time that we know existed at the time because they had interactions with all kinds of people across that region. They had because they were great traders. And notice that you have a trade route. So if you look at the old maps, Petra is on all of those trade routes. That's exactly what I was talking about. So it has a sanctuary and it has tombs. Mecca is not on any of the trade routes. If you look at the trade routes, they're going to come across the ocean here. They're going to come up the Red Sea, come up the Gulf of Aqaba, or go up the, the Gulf of Suez right there. And Petra is where the Nabataean Aramaic was spoken and written, which later gave birth to the Arabic that we find in the Quran. Petra is where all the mosques, up to 706 folks, were facing. All the Qiblas, up to 706, were facing towards Petra. And then we know this because there's a mosque clear out here in China and India that faced towards Petra. Not Mecca, but Petra. So the conclusion, Petra seems to be the original sanctuary, later copied in to be Muhammad or redacted, or I'm sorry, Mecca to be redacted back to being Mecca. So the problem with all of the traditions, the standard Islamic narrative, is that Petra is way too far north. and it contradicts all of those standard narratives. Okay, who's got a comment on that? Anybody have a comment on that? Go ahead. Why didn't the say that again? What? Well, they change it. It does not even say Mecca in that sense when it says that you're going to turn the direction of prayer, and then it goes on to say in the hadith to the Masjid al-Haram, which is supposed to be the mosque in Mecca. I think that's the name of the mosque there. I think I'm willing to be wrong on that, but I don't think I am. Uh-oh. Hey, is that for me? Oh, well, thank you.
This is nougat. It's like what super good. Nama got it. It's like nougat.
Okay.
It's really good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was hungry. I was wondering if I was going to get that.
Mm-hmm.
Who do we got as special guest tonight barking? Who is that? Oh, is that... Oh, it's a sound effect. Okay, I thought it was somebody's dog going off. Let's see. Allah also speaks. Andrew, what is he saying here? Allah also speaks of the Dead Sea and of Sodom. Okay, okay, exactly. And where is the Dead Sea? That is way far north, up by Petra. And Sodom and Sodom and Gomorrah, where they have... Have you guys ever seen... They've had documentaries out about where the modern day Sodom and Gomorrah is supposed to exist, where they have these sulfur balls all over the place that you don't find anywhere else. Have you guys seen this before? Yeah. I don't know what the truth is about that, but okay. But when do they admit from? Has there been any type of hypothesis or any type of scholarship done on their origins or they? I don't. You can't. Right. Fire and brimstone, for lack of even a better term. Okay, what do we got going here? I'm sorry. Okay, that's not what I was looking at. So I was thinking that we saw a recent article on a meteor. What is this here? On a meteor impact in, I think that's you saying that area. Yeah, and that very well may be. When we start looking at confirmation for the Bible, there is more than enough evidence out there to confirm many of the stories that we do find in the Bible. We don't find any confirming any of the stories that we find in the Quran that are supposed to exist or supposed to have taken place in and around the Hijaz, well, not the Hijaz, but Mecca itself. And that's the point of this show, the Meccan mystery. There is nothing there demonstrating that Mecca existed in the 7th century. And what the evidence does demonstrate is that the origins of Islam occurred much further north than what they're proposed to be down in what is the Hijaz, the Mecca and Medina. That is the point of this show. Folks, I want to call it quits for the night. I had a meal here. I don't want it to get cold. This brought in my granddaughter. They're feeling sorry for me out there with them women. I'm out there. I can hear them out there partying. They're having a good time. I'm not going to go out there, though. All right. Well, thank you for coming. All right, Connie, thank you all for coming. Rad. Yep. Thank you, Darcy, for coming. I appreciate you popping in. Even Darcy was just she was normally one of the first ones here. She was a little late tonight. I saw her and she was in the chat anyway. Issa, I saw you. Thank you for coming, sir. What is this? Okay. Where were you? Okay. What was it, a Skype message or a Facebook message? You're going to be doing what again? What do you got on there? Tell us. Oh yeah, that's right. You're at the homecoming. Okay. So what are you doing tonight? All right. Yeah? What kind of homecoming stuff are you doing? Did you go to a dance? Ah, yeah. Well, you know, I remember homecoming was always such a big deal. I never saw why it was so great, because it was football and not basketball. But that's just me saying, because I was a basketball player, not a football player. Yeah, I was too small to play football. When I was in eighth grade, I was 4'10", and I played a wing back. And I remember this clear as day. I got the ball, I ran right up the middle, and a kid who was like 6'20" picked me up above his head and just body slammed me onto the ground. That was just the last tackle football game, because I was always too small. And so, you know, I got into high school, I got a little bigger, but by then, I lost interest in it, and that's okay. So Andrew's going to post a PDF. All right, well, thank you for coming, Issa. I hope you enjoy yourself tonight. Stay out of trouble. Don't be getting yourself into trouble in the home cut. I know them. Oh, it is. All right. God bless you. All right, anybody else have anything that they wanted to add? Ed, Connie, Sharon, Chip. Okay. All right. Well, God bless everybody, and we will see you on Sunday on the cross. Oh, I got a special announcement that I'm going to make on Sunday. Oh, by the way, it's a good one. We're having a special guest coming on next month. I just worked that out. Bob the Builder. But that under your hats. All right. God bless you. And we'll see you on Sunday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time on the Cross in the Crescent discussion group. Where is it? Right there.